Agile for Humans is brought to you by Audible.com. Get one free audiobook and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/agile. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, including Scrum, The Art of Doing Twice the Work in Half the Time by Jeff Sutherland, and Crucial Conversations by Kerry Patterson. Visit www.audibletrial.com/agile to enjoy your free audiobook today.
Processes and tools dominate today's Agile discussions, but we are devoted to the individuals and interactions that make it work. From the beginner to the veteran practitioner, we have something for you. Welcome to Agile for Humans.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Agile for Humans. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. Joining me tonight, the remotest Agile people I know, Mr. Mark Kilby and David Horowitz. Gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great, Ryan.
Great. So the listeners, many of you will remember Mark Kilby from episode one, joined us on the very first episode of Agile for Humans, has had a great conversation with us on that inaugural episode. He's now come back to help us have a conversation around remote teams and retrospectives with remote teams, two very difficult topics mashed into one. Mark is co-founder of, I think, Agile Orlando, a noted Agile consultant from multiple companies all over the country, a noted Agile speaker most recently at the big conference, Agile 2015, where he has spoken on that multiple times, I believe. All-around great guy in the community, and someone that the show is proud to call a friend. So, Mark, thanks for joining us.
Oh, and thanks for having me on again, Ryan. And wow, what an intro. Thanks so much.
Yeah. David, so you are the CEO of Retrium. You've reached out into the marketplace to solve a very critical problem. I want you to explain it, because I think you've put together a very interesting story about your passion, your brand, your company, and I think you could do it far better than I could.
Yeah, great. First of all, thanks for having me, Ryan. Really appreciate it. I'm a big fan of the show and really excited about being on. So as you mentioned, I'm the CEO and co-founder of Retrium, and we make software that enables distributed teams to run effective retrospectives, or at least that's what we hope. And so I came from, to solve this problem, from a pain point that I had myself, which was that I was what I like to call a poor man's Agile coach at a very large, big bank, international bank, that was trying to move away from traditional waterfall towards Agile, and our development teams were distributed. And as you probably can imagine, there's a lot of pain in trying to move to a new culture, into Agile. But among the bigger problems that we had was running good retrospectives. And Mark, you probably, I would guess, would agree with me that kind of retrospectives are the core of Agile, that Agile's all about continuous improvement. And if you aren't continuously improving, then you're not Agile. And how do you continuously improve? It's through the retrospective. So it really bothered me when I was in this Agile coaching position that my teams weren't able to run these retrospectives very effectively. And I started thinking, well, why is that? And is there a solution out there? And if not, why isn't it published? Why isn't there a solution? So, Mark, I reached out to you pretty early on to try to pick your brain a little bit about this problem. And you know, you kind of told me pretty quickly, this is a major issue in industry. Yeah. And so that's my passion, what we're trying to solve. And I really, really think that if we can do that successfully, then the distributed teams that exist today will become a lot more productive.
Yeah. Well, and I think what's critical for, and while I'm fond of Retrium, what I'll say is, I think what's critical is you felt the pain. You know, you've been in that scrum master, that coach role where you've been like, how do I make this work? And that's really the biggest challenge of distributed teams. Now, I've had many successes in getting distributed teams to work together. As a matter of fact, I came off the road as a consultant to work for my current company, and now an internal coach at Sonatype, primarily for the challenge of working with 100% distributed Agile teams right now. So we have four different teams, all running Scrum, and other teams as well, some running Kanban. But they are all functioning just about as well as any of the co-located teams that I have ever worked with. And I think part of that's the technology and the tooling, but I think there's more than that involved. I think the influence of Agile has been a big part of that, that people are realizing they have to collaborate on a frequent basis and they have to find a way to get feedback on it frequently. So it's looking for how do we get those feedback loops, whether it's from each other or systems, whatever. But I think there's that convergence of the technology, Agile influences, and attitudes of people as well.
Yeah.
Working remote.
Yeah, I think you touched on something really important, which is, to me at least, if you don't get culture and you don't get relationships right, it doesn't matter what tools you pick. And, you know, as a tool owner, I'll be the first one to own up to that statement, right? So culture comes first. But it is also true, I think, that if you have tools that can help you build that culture and build the relationships necessary to be an effective team, then that is very much an enabling factor. If you don't have those good tools, it's hard to become a good team in terms of culture and in terms of relationships and trust and empathy. You know, video chat, which in today's world seems relatively simple, is actually not, in my opinion. Yeah. You know, you lose a lot through video chat. So how do you overcome some of those challenges with your teams, Mark? Because you said you're so effective, right? So I want to know. I want your lessons.
Have a really big toolbox, essentially, is one of the things. So, you know, you were talking about video chat in particular. So we actually use several different tools for video chat because you never know when one system is going to have an issue and can we quickly switch to another. So I'll mention a few other tools here that we happen to use, but, you know, not plugging any particular ones. But some days it's JoinMe because we can pull up, you know, a meeting screen, but as well we can pull video up these days and JoinMe. Or if it's one-to-one, we might switch to HipChat video or Google Hangouts. And actually, we don't tend to use Skype that much because of the other tool sets we have. But it's always having a backup way to connect, a backup way to communicate as part of that.
So now that you've noted all of David's main competitors, let's move forward. No, and I think it's an important question that David brought up because it is a pain point. You know, and so Mark, be having success in that, you know, you really talked about the end state. David, I was wondering if you would lay out kind of that painful state that you noted that initially urged you into the world of entrepreneurship.
Yeah. So like I said before, to me, the core of Agile, the key of Agile is continuous improvement. And the way that you do that is through the retrospective. Now, with all of the co-located teams that I've been a part of, one of the best ways to run an effective retrospective is through really good facilitation. You can't just sit everyone down around a table and say, okay, guys, let's chat, and hope that you're going to come up with the key pain points that the team is experiencing, and not just the pain points, but also the plan to move forward. This has to be a structured conversation. And so, you know, typically you can read, you know, Esther Derby and Diana Larson's book, which is a great book about retrospectives, in my opinion, kind of the Bible of how to run a good retrospective with lots of different phases and different ways of structuring the conversation. Really recommend it. But in a nutshell, what you end up with is a toolkit of facilitation techniques, things like 4 L's, or Mad, Sad, Glad, or Lean Coffee, or an appreciations retrospective. I could go on and on. The problem with a distributed team, and this is the pain point that I was facing, was that it's really hard to run those techniques when you don't have physical items to use, like flip charts and sticky notes and markers and things. It's really hard to replicate that environment. And so most of the time when I was in this kind of poor man's agile coach role, we just sat around a video chat and talked. And we got nowhere. And it was the most frustrating experience I've ever had as an Agile coach. And it kind of lit a fire in me and said, you know what? This is not just a problem for me. This is a problem industry-wide. And then that, in combination with this trend towards being distributed, you know, it seems to me, and you know, Mark or Ryan, correct me if you think that I'm wrong on this, but more and more teams are becoming distributed as we speak. And the future of work to me is distributed work. It's a work from where you are, when you want type of environment. And the combination of those two things really said, hey, I gotta, if no one else is solving this problem, someone has to, right? And I want to be that guy. So that's kind of what lit the fire and made me jump off the deep end and go for it.
Yeah, and I think your observation there is spot on, especially when you look at some of the more successful internet companies today. You know, I think of Basecamp, which was formerly known as 37 Signals. Mm-hmm. This is the epitome of excellence in the software industry, in my opinion. This is a small company. I think they have, you know, last I looked, around 40, maybe at the most, people. They all work distributed. They have a Chicago office, but, you know, half the time their co-founders in Europe, half their programmers are spread across the Midwest, East Coast, West Coast. They're all distributed. They all do brilliant work. They manage to pull it off as a team. And I think that's the model that's going to eat a lot of lunches of these traditional, monolithic, massive companies that are still expecting everyone to show up in a cubicle day after day. And so solving this tool problem, in many ways, I think will create kind of the new business model and the new economy. So I think it is a very important observation. And it's certainly a pain point, especially even in companies today. I mean, we all, I think, work in this new economy where, you know, our after-hours support team is in a different country. And being able to catch up in the morning with that team before the handoff, how do you do that in the most effective way? How do you make sure that there's still a team sense or a team type atmosphere instead of people you just hand off to and walk away from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So I'll jump in on this one. So coming back to what, you know, David was poking me for, I was thinking about this the other day about some of the things that we do with our distributed teams now, and in a way it almost comes back to that first value of the Agile Manifesto. And I started thinking about, you know, it's more than left right, you know, individuals and interactions over processes and tools. It's really, you can think of it as a set of steps, which works just as well for co-located teams as distributed teams, but you've got to be a little more intentional with the distributed team. So first, usually what I do is I get to know the individuals on the team. I want to understand, why are they working this way? What's in it for them? So for instance, for me, for working remotely, I've still got kids in school. I still have young kids in school. And so I want to be close to them. I don't want to miss them growing up. I don't want to miss some of those daily events. And so being able to work from home each day gives me that flexibility. But understanding what the different motivations are for every individual on the team is important. Then thinking about the interactions. And I'm doing a little collaboration with Jim Benson from Modus Institute and some of the things that they're putting together for distributed teams. And I love how they focus on things, not only project charter and mapping at the value stream, but they also focus heavily on communications plan. So as a distributed team, you really have to think about, how are we going to communicate? What's the frequency of different communications? When should we expect certain communications? Because you're not going to bump into each other in the hallway. Yeah, you might see each other on chat or something, but being really talking about, how do we need to connect with each other? What time zones, or how far are we spread out in time zones, and how do we need to connect? An example of that is, we have different communications channels, as I mentioned before, and we have backups for when those primaries fail because we want to connect daily. But there's also sometimes where you need to have some casual communications as well. So one of the things we focus on is being intentionally social at work. So we have some social chat channels. One's called the Lounge. And so in the Lounge, you can talk about anything. You can talk about what you saw on TV last night. You can share vacation photos, whatever. And there's a few groups that do this. So Atlassian has written about this. I think the folks at Basecamp and WordPress do something similar to that. We also read how Salesforce has a chat channel. I forget what they call it, but basically it's a rant channel. And so if you're really upset about something or someone, you go into the rant channel and just whatever you need to say, you know, goes. And nobody judges you by that. So we've experimented with that. That one hasn't been as popular for us, but it's experimenting with different ways to communicate. So you focus on individuals' interactions and then really start looking at processes and tools, But if you don't look at how you're going to connect the people together, kind of going back to what David was saying about focusing on the culture, because if you don't do that, you're just a collection of strangers. You're not a team. You're not a company. You're just sort of this random collection. And just as a side note, David and I are going to be participating in a very interesting conference here next month in Germany, called the Distributed Agile Teams, or the Flock, Distributed Agile Teams Flock. And we've got a collection of folks that have very different ways of working in distributed teams. So I'm excited to be doing a workshop there, but I'm even more excited to be talking more with David and other folks who are looking at some of these different ways of connecting people so they can work effectively.
Yeah, and Mark, I would just like to echo what you just said about the need to focus on building a team and not just being a random collection of strangers. I mean, I couldn't agree more with that statement. The idea of bumping into someone in a hallway if you're co-located, and, you know, if you ask yourself, why is that so important? What is it about randomly bumping into someone that's so critical? Yeah. And, you know, because it seems kind of superfluous at first. You're there to do work, but randomly bumping into someone and saying, hey, let's do coffee or let's make a lunch date, allows you to build a connection with that individual. Yeah. And, you know, what I've found when I've worked on distributed teams is that unless you do that intentionally, it's very easy to lose empathy for other people on your team and think of people who are not in the same physical location as you as just resources. Mm-hmm. And when they're not delivering something on time or you haven't heard from them in a while, you start making assumptions very easily that, hey, they're not working hard, or what's wrong with those people? Yeah. But it's not those people. It's us. We're a team. And if you have a good relationship with everyone, then you can easily, or more easily rather, get past some of those inclinations that we all have, let's be honest, right? We're all humans. We all have the tendency to do that and assign blame. So it's really critical. What I like to say is that you can't just be distributed. You have to focus on being good at being distributed. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, the cost of being distributed is far outweighs the benefits. And then in terms of the benefits of being distributed, though, I just kind of like to make my pitch about it a little bit, because I think people have a bad taste in their mouths a lot of times from experiences with distributed teams where...
I've been there.
Right? And me too. it's all over. And it doesn't have to be that way. I think one of the reasons why people tend to say, oh, I don't want to be distributed, is because strategically for a long time, the reason that teams became distributed was to save on cost. Mm-hmm. And that meant outsourcing.
Yeah.
And while that can be effective, I think, Mark, what you and I are talking about in terms of being distributed is, let's hire the best talent, regardless of where it is. And that's not to save cost. That's to find the right people. Yeah. So when you say, hey, we're going to be a distributed team, you have to step back and say, well, why? What's the goal of being distributed? And as long as it's to hire the best people and to build the best team and not to save money, then it's a great choice. And then it also means that you're going to want to focus on being good because the people you're working with are good. And that's an empowering situation to be a part of, I think.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, horrifying to traditional companies, though, that when you hire a remote team, they have the ultimate mobility and flexibility. So as the economy moves towards a remote work environment, it's no longer difficult for me to switch companies and switch roles, right? Because now if I want to go work for a different company in my field or in my industry, I may have to move to a different state. And there's hassles and there's considerations and there's proximity to family and there's all these ties and things that keep people rooted in their communities. Well, if I can work from, you know, Fort Wayne, Indiana, and work for anywhere or work for anyone anywhere in the world, I now have the ultimate type of mobility, right?
Yeah. And you could probably do that switch in about an hour or two, by the way.
Exactly. Right? It's a few forms, a drug test, and you're with a new company.
Yeah, boom, done. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We should pass.
You know, I think in the long run, that's probably good for the industry. It's going to up the quality of what companies have to offer employees and what employees have to deliver to companies to retain them. Yeah. So that's not a bad thing.
Well,
no, and I totally agree. It's a great shift that I think that the next few generations, I think that these, you know, I don't use the millennial term negatively, but I think as the millennials come up, I think they're going to demand, and that you're starting to see signs of this, I think, in the marketplace where they're demanding the different types of work environments that companies are adapting and adjusting to. And I think this is one of those concessions that they're really saying, look, I want to live in this location, but I want to work for this great company. If you want my talent, this has to be an option.
Yeah. Well, so yes, and
improv skill right there.
I think it's a mind shift for the companies, but it's also a mind shift for those of us who are, you know, in the trenches as well. So I can't remember exactly, but there was something that David was saying earlier that reminded me. We were talking about the intentionality of working together, and you've got to be intentional in how you connect with people. And so we don't. And maybe it's my generation because I'm on the borderline of a couple generations. But growing up, you didn't have to be intentional to start a conversation. You just hang out with folks. But when you're in a distributed environment, you have to be intentional to connect with people. You have to be intentional to share a little bit about you, which some people, that they're very apprehensive about that. We have a lot of introverts in our company.
Shockingly. Introverts? Come on.
Yeah. Distributed and software. Hey. But, you know, as a coach or scrum master or really any role where you're in an agile leadership role, you still have to find ways to connect with them and help them to connect. So one thing I often do is, I'll throw out small jokes or quotes, or sometimes I'll end a meeting in an unusual way. So for those who know the show Top Gear in the UK, one of their favorite ways to close the show is, and on that bombshell, and so sometimes I'll throw that out in a meeting, and I'll get a chat right after the meeting. Hey, was that from Top Gear? I love that show. And so just by throwing out little things like that, you make a connection with that person. And so you spend a little time afterwards chatting with them, getting to know them, just based on throwing out some stupid line like that.
You know what? It's funny. I ended a staff meeting today with, and there's no way Glenn survived. And I think half the room was in an uproar within 2 seconds. But
and the rest wanted to know, what are you guys talking about?
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
No, most of the group knew. But you're right, Mark. It's a memorable way to end a meeting. It endears people to you, and it sparks a quick little. It's the meeting after the meeting, which was one of the questions I was going to have for you guys. Because part of being a co-located team is that you can have this meeting, you can linger in the boss's office, you can linger in your peer or colleague's office, and have that quick 30-second or minute or however long it is, meeting after the meeting where you say, hey, what did you think about this? Hey, are you doing all right? How are your kids?
Yeah. Or meeting before the meeting.
Exactly.
Yeah, sometimes we'll do that with our stand-ups where there'll be a few of us that'll gather a few minutes early and we'll just kind of check in with each other. And that's just, you know, those times before and after are just as critical.
So I'm going to slightly disagree with both of you here and do a yes, but.
Oh, good.
I think what you're saying.
All right, someone mute that mic. Mute that mic.
Right. I think what both of you are saying is true for a certain type of person. But you have to be careful because when you have introverts working on a distributed team, there is a tendency for those people to become even more introverted because it's easy to hide behind the technology.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to ask yourself, though, is that good or bad? And without making any value judgments here, because, of course, it depends on context and so on, introverts can get very uncomfortable with unstructured conversation and jokes and any sort of, you know, poking at you for any reason. And there's a certain amount of structure that introverts like to conversation. Mm-hmm. And so ending a talk or a chat with something that is funny for extroverts might actually not appeal to the other half of people on your team and might make them feel less like they're part of the group. So you have to be a little careful, I'd say.
So I've got a story for you. Okay, so when I joined Sonatype and one of the first teams I worked with, I, as connecting with the individuals, I made a point of getting in some kind of video call with each person on the team, of which many of my introverts were like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
And I said, listen, you don't have to talk. I said, I just want to kind of get to know you. I want to give you a little bit of my background and any questions you want to ask me up front. Usually, there was one question, what are you going to change? because they knew my background as an Agile coach. And so the answer was always the same, was my goal is not to change anything. I said, my goal is to help you guys where you feel you need help. So with that, where do you guys feel you need help? And the one thing that came out of this was, oh, our meetings are just terribly long. I said, oh, really? Interesting. So tell me about that. And so they told me how they dragged on. They were unstructured. And so picking up on that, I kind of went hyper efficient. I turned the efficiency knob up to 11, and we started ended up with our meetings becoming like 20-minute meetings eventually, and so then there would be times where I'd end a meeting early. I go, oh, I'm sorry guys, I ended the meeting early. I hope that's okay, and then that would be it, and so with that, then I started adding some of the jokes, but brief, keeping them very brief, just to make some connections. And I found some of the introverts starting to toss some jokes out too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So. Yeah, so there you go. And yeah. you mentioned kind of time boxing, which I like a lot as a technique. Oh, yeah. Yeah, time boxing. It's really critical. So one of the things that we're doing with Retrium is we have these toolbox of techniques where you can pick one like Mad, Sad, Glad, which has certain phases to it. So the first one is private brainstorming. You get a chance to record your ideas down when no one else can see what you're doing. And then you move into dot voting where you can vote on the ideas that resonate the most with you. Not just your own, but anyone. And then you can move into discussion where you can talk about those ideas in a prioritized way and come up with action items to move forward. And the nice thing about having a flow that's predefined like that is that everyone on the team knows this is where we are in the meeting, this is what's coming, and this is what we have left to do. And as a result of that, you can keep the conversation going instead of letting it run on and on. I mean, how many conference calls have you been on that they just drone on and on forever, and yeah, you end up putting it on mute and you play games on your phone because you're so bored. It's awful. I don't think I've ever been on a good conference call. They're really terrible. So having that facilitation piece along with time boxing to move the conversation forward at a good pace is really critical, especially for a distributed team, for co-located also, but especially for distributed.
Well, so I'll add to that, the one thing I discovered as part of maintaining connections even in a meeting is back channels are critical. So I always like to have a chat channel running, which some people go, oh my gosh, no, that's going to distract people. People are going to be distracted anyway. But if you can focus them on a back channel when they can't focus on the main part of the meeting, or maybe they can't break in and realize they have another way to get into the meeting, then I've found that as there is better engagement. There's still a tendency to do some multitasking, and I don't get too spun up by that. But using time boxes, using back channels, there's a way to keep the meeting moving. And I emphasize to the teams, like, all right, if this is dragging on, then let's shorten it. Let's find a way to change this, and we'll do a short retrospective on the meeting right there. It's like, all right, what do you want to do different next time so this doesn't drag on? Mm-hmm. So,
how do you guys handle group learning? You know, when a team learns together, they grow together. When a team's co-located, they typically share lessons quickly. You can hear the conversations over the wall. You can pick up on things and jump in quickly. You know, clearly that would be at least more difficult in a distributed environment. But what have you guys seen as far as tips, tricks, or tools that allow you to make sure the team learns and grows together?
So I hate to start with a tool because usually that's not the place to start, but I'm going to throw one out anyway in this case, which is Sococo. Big fan of Sococo. So if you haven't heard of Sococo, it's basically a tool that allows you to recreate a office environment online. So you have an office map with closed door offices and open office layout if you wanted. You have the water cooler, you have the bathroom, and you can move your avatar from place to place on the map. To indicate whether you're busy, you know, or whether you're talking to someone or in a meeting. The reason I bring that up in response to your question is that unlike, you know, what we're doing right now where we're kind of chatting in a free-form way over Skype, Sococo allows you to recreate that sense of, hey, we're going to chat kind of in this back channel after the meeting in this room over here, or we're going to stay back in this conference room now, even though the meeting's over, to keep chatting about it. And the visual sense that you get from those avatars being in different rooms is really useful because it lets the team know what you're up to and what you're doing. So it's not the fact that you're using Sococo that helps. It's what Sococo does for you. It's the value Sococo provides, which is recreating that office space a bit that can help you learn with others.
Yeah.
So I think that tool is very interesting. Another advancement that I think would need to happen, or maybe it has happened, and you guys can clue me in, because like I said, my current experience right now is in a very much a co-located team. There are a few remote individuals that we have on the team, but for the most part, it is co-located, would be the hindrance in pair and mob programming. And so I'm wondering, I know that we now have online IDEs, mm-hmm. which are fairly interesting, but have you seen a solution that allows, you know, two video windows, one IDE, ability to hand off control, and the ability for pair or mob programming to truly take place in a collaborative way with remote users? And if not, then that's product number two, David.
Yeah, after I sell this one for $1 billion, right?
There you go. Yeah,
mob programming, no. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Even just pair. So yeah. Let's take it down. Let's dial it back a bit. For the ability to pair program, which I think is an interesting and sometimes necessary option for remote people, just the ability to recreate that experience. Yeah.
Well, the one I've heard the most about as far as pair programming is Screen Hero, which was, I was just checking here online. Yeah, so they were recently purchased by Slack. But I haven't used it personally, but I know some of our teams have used Screen Hero for pair programming, and they thought it was fantastic. They thought it was a very smooth transition from one person to another. Being able to see each other's what they're working on, being able to comment in real time. I'm not sure how the integration with Slack is, but that's the one I hear about the most as far as pair programming tools. I know there's others out there. I just don't know the names off the top of my head.
Yeah. The other thing I'd mention with that, I mean, it's not really pair programming, but it is about sharing knowledge, is if your team's distributed, you can have this concept of rotating remote pairing, where, you know, this week I'm paired with Mark, and that means that as we're working, we're making sure that we're knowledge sharing, we're making sure that we're working very closely together, and what I'm doing and what I'm learning about the requirements that we have or about the software that we're building or our stakeholders or whatever is shared very closely with Mark this week, and the same is true in reverse. And then next week we shift and we rotate so that two more people are paired together. And by doing that, you can both build relationships with that person you're paired with by, you know, just chatting or talking about whatever you did this past weekend, but also share knowledge about the work that you're doing as well. So it's not pair programming, but it is pairing in a different sense.
Well, and I was going to say, you can take that pairing concept and apply it in many different ways. So something I've often done as another secret tip there in meetings is use the buddy system. So if I know I've got some distributed folks and co-located folks, I'll ask, hey, you know, I'm facilitating the meeting, folks. I'm going to be really busy trying to make sure things are going right. You can help me by connecting with one of these remote people and being in a chat window with them and just making sure they can connect with us, or if they miss anything, they can talk to you as their buddy, say, hey, what did they just say? Okay. And then let us know so we can stop and go back, because others might have missed it as well. So I've used that buddy system many, many times in many different ways. And it helps those remote people feel more connected when you have some co-located folks with you in the room.
So David, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about your retrospective tool. It's an interesting concept to me because, again, we're trying to learn remotely as a team. It sounds like you have different modes and models that you can follow. So you can do the Mad, Glad, Sad. You can do, it sounds like a few other of the popular models that we read about and know about. But what is the value proposition of the tool that your company provides, and what kind of benefits and improvements in remote collaboration have you seen your tool bring to teams and organizations?
Yeah, so obviously I'm glad you asked that question, but I don't want this to be an advertisement, because this is really just talking about distributed agile, and my tool is one part of that. But since you asked,
well, no, I think it's important. This is a little inside baseball for some of the listeners, but as a podcast host, such as myself, where the podcast is focused on individuals and interactions, I want to be careful about promoting tools, but in this case, it's a tool designed to enhance the interactions.
Well, right.
And it's about the people. And so the reason we ask about this and the reason I was very interested in talking to David here is because he has a tool that's focused on people and the interactions that they have and creating a positive outcome and environment for those interactions to occur. And so I think that's the important note on a tool discussion. So it's not really an advertisement. What I'm asking David really is, what can your tool do to bring people together?
Yeah. So there are really four things. And these are all based on an article that a professor, his name is Dr. Tomas Chamorro Permusic, published in Harvard Business Review. And he identified four different problems that teams that are trying to brainstorm face. They are social loafing, and I'll describe what these are in a minute. So social loafing, social anxiety, regression to the mean, and production blocking. So let's start with the beginning. So social loafing. So I love the word social loafing or the term because it kind of resonates with me. So how many times have you been in a meeting where someone's talking too much and they go on and on and on, and as a result of that, you don't feel like you have the time or the space to contribute, and you just kind of loaf. You're there for the ride. You're not really contributing. Your presence is there, but your presence also is not there, right? So that's a social loafing problem in terms of communication, made even harder by distributed, right? That's the first one. The second problem is social anxiety. So people who are introverts, very hard to contribute to a free-flowing conversation like we talked about before. I feel very uncomfortable with that. When you're distributed, very easy to hide behind technology. The third problem is regression to the mean. It's the idea that when you have lots of different people in a room contributing ideas to a conversation, if the first person who throws out an idea, on average, it'll be an average idea. On average, it's not going to be the best idea or the worst. It'll be kind of just an average idea. And once you've thrown that idea out there, everyone else's thought processes are anchored to that idea, that the rest of the conversation is based on that first idea that was thrown out to the group. That's a problem because you're not going to end up with the extreme good idea or the extreme bad. So that's an issue. And then the fourth one is production blocking, which is that if only one person can talk at one time, then everyone else is sitting there twiddling their thumbs. And that's a big waste of time for a lot of people in the meeting. So those are four problems. So at Retrium, when we were building the software, we're trying to solve all four of those things. So let me quickly go through and how we did that. So with social loafing, we have this phase called private brainstorming, where everyone can contribute their own ideas to the board immediately, as soon as they enter the meeting. So you don't have to wait for someone else to talk. And the goal here is to try to encourage people to participate in the meeting and not feel like they can just attend without really attending. So private brainstorming is our answer to social loafing. Social anxiety, because you write things down on the board in Retrium before you talk about them verbally, people who are more introverted can communicate in a way that they're more comfortable with. That's really useful. With regression to the mean, again, because people are contributing all up front at once, and you don't actually have any exposure to anyone else's ideas before you have a chance to contribute, as a result of that, you are not anchored to ideas that are on the board or on the table. You have your own ideas. You think for yourself. That's really critical. And then the last one, production blocking. So again, you're all contributing all at once before you start talking about the ideas in a prioritized way. So there's no production blocking involved. The communication is enhanced because everyone is involved and active in the meeting. So I think that kind of sums it up. Four of those problems, we tried to solve them all. And the focus is to enable communication rather than to distract from the communication. That's the fundamental premise of Retrium. And I think any tool that doesn't focus on that is really missing the point, ultimately.
It sounds like a really innovative way to attack this problem, so I really appreciate you walking through that.
Yeah.
It is a tough nut to crack. It is for a podcast like this, like you said, we're talking over Skype, the tool kind of falls to the background, we can all see each other and we have a conversation. To replicate that experience in a retro, I think, is a game changer. So I wish you luck with that.
Thank you.
And I hope you're successful with it because it's a tool that I need. I think there's a lot of agile teams out there, and not necessarily just Scrum, but Kanban and Lean. They all have the need to enhance their feedback loops. No matter what flavor of agile you're doing, you've got to talk to other people and figure out what went wrong, what went right, and how to improve. And like you said, continuous improvement is at the heart of what we're doing. You know, if you guys get this right, it really can empower these distributed teams to get the maximum benefits of Agile with the maximum flexibility of remote work. So it really is interesting and great work that you're doing, David.
Awesome. Really appreciate it. Yeah. And
And I want to jump in there too, Ryan. Having played a little bit with Retrim and used it with my teams a couple of times, I can certainly do some of the same exercises in like a Google Doc. But the difference is, as the facilitator, I have to work a lot harder. I have to get the Google Doc set up if I want to hide portions of the document, because I want the structured conversation, and I don't want them jumping ahead in different parts. I want them working together on certain parts. I have to work very hard to structure that properly in a more basic sharing tool like a Google Doc. The part that really excited me about Retrim was that there is more of a facilitation aids, I guess, in the tool set. The one thing, though, that we all need to be cautious of, though, is not relying too much on the tools. And this is not a shot at any particular tool, but that's also why I tend to have a few tools in the toolbox, because Mr. Murphy of Murphy's Law is on every team, and so you've got to be ready to shift gears as a facilitator, so that if the conversation goes in a very different direction, it may not fit the particular activity you've got set for them. So there's some things I can do in certain tools and things I can't do. So sometimes I have to shut one tool down and bring another one up so I can maybe help them with where that conversation's going. So that's something to be aware of too.
And that really lies at the heart of Agile anyway, which is that if you've identified a problem, fix it. Right. And so I couldn't agree more. Retrium does a lot of things well. It's not perfect. I'll be the first one to admit that. We have a long way to go to make it an even better tool. So the goal always has to be the continuous improvement and not the tool. And we're hoping that the tool helps provide the continuous improvement. But again, go back to culture, go back to building trust and empathy. That's the core of everything. And if you can't get that, the tool won't matter.
And I think that's a great spot for us to look and see that, along with being at the core of Agile, continuous improvement is important. So are our time boxes. And I think for this conversation, guys, we have hit our time box. And I just want to say I really appreciate you guys coming on, because like I said, Mark, you are at the forefront of Agile teams working remotely. David, you're working on cutting edge tools, where I think you guys have your hearts in the right place. And so I hope that shined through to the listeners that, you want the culture and you want the individuals and you want the feedback and the interactions, all that to be at the forefront and the tool to be behind that. And I think that's a great outlook for a company to take. So I really appreciate you telling us your story as well. At this point in the show, as we wrap up, we offer the guests an opportunity to plug anything else that they have going on, any events you're speaking at, ways that people can get a hold of you. So Twitter handles, websites, anything that you've got going on. Mark, we'll start with you. What would you like to plug? How can the listeners continue the conversation with you?
Okay. Well, so as I mentioned, both David and I are going to be doing workshops at the Distributed Agile Teams Flock in Berlin. I'll send you the link so you can get it in the show notes, because it's a long one, so I'm not even going to try to rattle it off here. But there's just a really interesting group of speakers that are gathering there, so I'd highly recommend that. If you can't be in Berlin in mid-November, you can certainly reach me on Twitter as M. Kilby, M-K-I-L-B-Y. I'm on there often, and via my website, markkilby.com.
David, how about you?
Yeah, so I think you heard about my tool already. So it's retrium.com, R-E-T-R-I-U-M.com. We also have a blog there. That's blog.retrium.com. And on Twitter, I am DS_Horowitz. So D as in David, S as in Seth, _Horowitz, H-O-R-O-W-I-T-Z. And the Retrium Twitter account is R-E-T-R-I-U-M-H-Q. So it's Retrium HQ. And then lastly, in terms of the distribution, distributed Agile team camp, I'm just going to make one more plug for that because it really is going to be an awesome, awesome set of people who are running workshops. It is a no PowerPoint workshop session. So it is all going to be interactive and a lot of fun. And I can't wait personally to learn from all of the experts who are going to be there. It's a fantastic group of people. So if you can at any way possible be there in Berlin, November 19th and 20th, highly recommended. It's going to be really, really neat.
And I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. I am available on Twitter at Ryan Ripley. The website is ryanripley.com. We'd love your feedback. If you are enjoying Agile for Humans, please tell your friends. Please spread the word. If you feel so inclined, we'd love to hear your reviews and comments on either iTunes or on the blog site. Your feedback helps us make this better. You are our continuous feedback loop. So please, you know, give us the comments, give us your thoughts. What can we do to better serve you as the listener? That's what we're about here. We're not getting rich. We're just enjoying having conversations with friends, and we're hoping that they help you. And so that's what we're about. Your feedback is crucial and important. And just thank you for being here. The fact that we have a growing and significant audience is it's humbling to me. It's humbling to, you know, the other guests and co-hosts. It's just a great great thing that's going on here, and we really want to just thank you, the listener, for being there and for sharing the word and for clearly spreading out the podcast. So that's all that we have for this week, everybody. Thanks, and have a good night.
Thanks for listening to Agile for Humans. Let's keep the conversation going. Drop us a question on Twitter @AgileForHumans or visit agileforhumans.com.